Derby Spirit has pinched the Oaks by four lengths. But a champion becomes a legend. McCarty Deaver has won it.
Yes.com and the Den Easter Monday. Yeah, that's right. It's a public holiday. And while you all rest, watch the footy, watch the races, have a punt, we are busy at it. I'm Roger Aldridge. He's Richard Irvin. Trelby hasn't even been home yet, Rich.
No. It's been a big Easter weekend. Yes. Yeah, it is very early. We don't quit, do we? I've had a magnificent Easter weekend. The weather in Sydney's been sublime. I've watched just about every single horse race, every single football match. Spent a lot of time with the family, done a little bit of housework as well. The missus is pretty happy with me. And we're going to unpack all the great racing action from this weekend. Also looking forward as well at the end. There's a lot going on.
My family's been away all weekend, so I've also had a magnificent Easter. Let's get in to the Straight Six.
The Straight Six.
Oh, where else can you start about the All Age Stakes, Richard? A sensational ride by Ethan Brown. Jimmy Starr jumped much better this week, and Brown put him in a lot more forward a position than what we're accustomed. So you could see the writing on the wall late that turn of foot was going to see him swamp them all. It was a peach on Brown, who has six Group Ones this season.
Yeah,
he's rising through the ranks at a similar rate to Zach Lloyd.
Yeah, put him in the top 10. A few weeks back, I said he's ascending to the top 10 jockeys in Australia. You can put him in that category now, especially based on that ride there. It was such a beautiful ride, so strategic as well.
That's his best Group One ride.
He got on the back of Broadsiding, then he knew Sunshine in Paris was going to kick. He got up off her, and it was just beautiful to see. Great win by Jimmy. He really is a superstar, probably the best sprinter in the country.
That's not true. Kieran, superstar out too quickly, Rich.
Let's say that again.
Let's just reserve the term superstar for the elite. He's won two Group Ones. He's a very good horse.
Fair enough. But look, I think him and Ethan Brown are the breakout stars of the autumn. Kieran Maher said that he'll almost certainly go on and aim towards an Everest now, and you know why wouldn't he? Interesting. Do they push on up into Brisbane? They did with Bella Nipotina last year. Do they keep going with Jimmy? I've been trying to find out what the plan is with Jimmy, but I haven't been able to hear. One other interesting thing I did hear, Jack Turnbull said that they think that the reason he was a little inconsistent when he first started in Australia, because of course he came over from New Zealand, they thought he was a miler and they were training him that way. Now that they've just trained him as a sprinter, they seem to have got those brilliance into his legs. Should we talk about the Beaten Brigade, Rog? Jolly Star and Sunshine in Paris, both excellent. I believe Sunshine in Paris will probably have another run. I know that she hasn't won this prep, and I know that they'd be pretty keen for her to have a win. So I don't think I can see her going to Sangster, which is this weekend.
No, she wouldn't back up like that.
Benedetta was great. Looks towards 10,000.
Yeah, I know you sort of seem to think Briasa was a bit disappointed. I just think he found a couple better. I still think he 1,200 is going to be his best trip.
Yes, well, that's probably.
But I still think he runs a fine 1,400. I don't think we'd be throwing the bathwater out after that, saying, okay, well, let's just keep him to 1,200s.
Okay. I probably would think just keep him to 1,200. I thought he just didn't have that ping at the end there. But, you know, we'll see. I mean, I think that when it comes towards spring, there's so many sort of 1,100, 1,200-meter races anyway that would probably be okay for him. Broadsiding's the one that we've got to talk about. So let's bring up a poll. We've got a poll here. I asked the Den what to do with a Broadsiding. Do you race on for another year or send him to become a stallion off the back of his four Group 1 wins? Bear in mind that if you race on, you have to think he's up to performing consistently at weight for age level as a four-year-old. What's your thoughts on that, Rog?
Retire him because he does have enough Group 1s now to certainly have a good career as a stallion. And we've seen a lot of other horses retired already this autumn with far lesser resumes than what Broadsiding does, and he hasn't turned out to be the horse we probably thought he was, but in saying that, he still turned out to be a very fine horse.
Four Group 1 wins.
That we wanted him to be Animo, and Animo is a superstar.
Yes.
And he was not that.
Yes. Fair enough. And to round out the All Age, I thought we might look at the Stradbroke Market, because that's the next significant race on the calendar, or one of the significant races.
I don't think Steffi's going there. I'm pretty sure Steffi's definitely not going back to defend her Stradbroke.
Yes, that's right. She's, I think, in the paddock, or maybe not quite yet.
She's definitely.
But look, we don't even know what Jimmy Starr doing. But Giga Kick won't be going to Stradbroke as well. He'd be going towards the Kingsford Smith. I think it's Goodwood, then maybe the Kingsford Smith. Yeah, so a lot of water to go under the bridge between now and the Stratty, but why don't we talk about the new broadsiding, which is nepotism.
Jeez, you're throwing them out there, aren't you, really? I was barracking hard for nepotism because I love the narrative. A blue blood colt, racing royalty, both sides of his breeding. His grand dam, for those who aren't aware, is Helsinge, of course, the dam of Black Caviar. So in human terms, Black Caviar is his auntie, hence the name nepotism. He is now a Group 1 winner after three starts. And what a win it was, too. Like, have a look. He looked gone for all money for much of that race. And then that turn of foot went Wooshka. Now, I'm not saying that this was a banner field of two-year-olds that he was up against, but that is a win of a proper racehorse. And I think Michael Hawks alluded to just as much in his post-race interview with Emma Friedman as well.
Well, he's the new Chautauqua, isn't he? He's the new broadside of the new Chautauqua. That's what Chautauqua
Which means you're does. Not going to win. You know, they get back run on horses. As much as we love them and as much as they create the drama, they don't win out of turn.
No, that's right. It is a bit of an issue. They need to get him more on pace, but he's probably the two-year-old of the year.
So they've got plenty of time to teach that.
Absolutely, yeah. He's probably the two-year-old of the year, especially if he does go on and compete in the JJ Atkins, which is that 1600-metre Group 1 race.
Which is our friend Tom Hackett's favourite race of the year. He thinks it's the greatest two-year-old form race you'll ever see. A broadsiding, of course, has won it.
On straight break day. But I don't know what they're going to do with him. So, but he'll be a great stallion because of his, you know, well, I don't know if he'd be a great stallion, but he'll definitely go and be a stallion because of his strong breeding.
And his ownership. I mean, he's part owned by, obviously, Wear It.
Yes.
Hence the colours, but also Rick Jamison, who bred Black Caviar. So you'd imagine he'll go stand up there in the Gambi as well at some point. But I want to see him race for a lot longer. This, I said, it was only his third start. This horse is exciting.
Yeah, and talking about him racing longer, to me, he seems like the most capable colt, two-year-old colt, to go on into those weight for age ranks. Like, he could, on that run, he could absolutely run in a Cox plate. I mean, he's got a long way to go.
You're getting carried away on this episode. No, but they will. Monday. You're high on chocolate, but three starts into his career.
Now that we're coming to the end of this two-year-old season, out of all the horses of the race, he looks like the most realistic that could go on and race in the, you know, weight for age, the Cox plate, those kinds of things. Obviously, he'd stick to his own age and sex as much as possible.
Well, he's one of the mile where the others haven't. So, yeah, obviously, he's probably the one most likely to step up to 2,000 metres. But, gee, I'll just reserve my thoughts for a little while yet.
Yeah, and the Beaten Brigade Within the Law was great. She's had a fantastic prep. Really good for her to jump from 1,200 all the way to 1,600.
Going through the fence in the Golden Slipper. But,
Yeah, this is true. And Tupacara, still a maiden. Got to be the best maiden in Australia, doesn't it?
I don't know. It's just you're like Stephen A. Smith of .com and the Den Mondays. The way you just bring. Let's get the headlines. Chomit's drawing up these headlines for the tweets as we go. It was a fantastic race. They had a fantastic end to the carnival. I have very much enjoyed the Sydney Autumn, and obviously the focus does shift now to the other states. Let's head back to regional Victoria. You know, where my roots were laid. Good Friday, the $500,000 Country Discovery, and Midwest led Barrier to Box here. It was beautifully set up. It was built for speed. He's a speed horse. He jumped well. He was able to dictate terms. He was second favorite. Ray Magnera, of course, coming out of Group 1 company. Well, the weight was a lot and it was a tricky draw, but he just ended up too far back, and it was a pretty painless watch actually for the punters who took the $5 like myself on Midwest. Thanks, Mike.
Yeah, it was a strong win. The second leg of a double for Craig Williams. Beautiful front running ride. You see Ray Magnerio flashing late there. It was all too late, but $500,000 race, you'd expect a really good field, and they got that. Unsure what Midwest does now, but you would think they'd have to poke around probably in Adelaide, considering it's a little bit closer for him.
He's that next tier. Like he's a Group 2, Group 3 level horse. I don't think anyone's going to kid himself and say he's a Group 1 sprinter. He's a 1,000-metre speed horse who can win some very nice races and collect a lot of prize money for his owners, Rosemont. So, you know, there's a bit – he's a fun horse that you'd love – to own a Midwest. Also, the Country Oaks was the race prior to this, which was a nice little Moody on the Mic race-to-race double, because Elmer Rise, talk about painless watches. Elmer Rise was the winner of this race 1,000 metres out, I reckon. If we went all the way back, which we won't do, but she was very, very strong to the line. And never, I mean, it might look like, oh, yeah, she's got a challenge there on the outside, but she was never in any danger whatsoever. She was very strong to the line. This is a This is a filly that Moods has had a pretty good opinion of for a while. She had on a race at Flemington during Cup Week last year. He's really liked her last two starts, and she hasn't, or two of the last three starts, she hasn't been able to get up. But I spoke to him yesterday, and she's actually, I wondered whether she'd go to Adelaide or Brisbane. I'm like, oh, do you actually think she's up to that? No, no, no. She's going to the Andrew Ramsden. He wants a ticket into the Melbourne Cup.
Yeah.
He wants a golden ticket that he's not going to sell, Rich.
Well, that's great. I look very much forward to seeing her in the Andrew Ramsden. Big step up into the Melbourne Cup, but
Moods. Big step. A choker to the Melbourne Cup, although I think we've seen some Melbourne Cup winners in the last few years that have been, not too much prior, we're battling it out on bush tracks. This wasn't a bush meeting. This was a feature meeting on Friday. The feature meeting on Saturday was also not at one of our premier tracks in Victoria. It was at Mornington. And the Mornington Guineas. Now, this was very astute placement by Chris Waller, which is easy to say in hindsight, but, well, this show is entirely done in hindsight.
We're going to go Wooshka here.
Yeah, this is moving out. Now, she'd been finding some much better horses in much better races. So instead of trying at the elite level in the Champagne, he sends her down to a much more winnable race, ticks it off. She looks obviously a classy horse, and now she'll bounce off this 1,600-meter win and go into the Australasian Oaks this weekend, which is, of course, unlike most other Oaks, is a 2,000-meter race, the Australasian Oaks.
Let's throw the market up, Rog, and get a bit of context.
Let's do it. And she's favourite. Look at that.
Yeah. Yep. And then Benadryl obviously has Treasure of the Moment form. Polymnia, the giant.
But technically moving out's got Treasure of the Moment form too, because she ran ninth of nine in the binary.
Yeah. I mean, looking at that, moving out was pretty impressive. Yeah. Probably Polymnia for me, $6 seems okay.
I'd want to do a little bit more research. I've got to be honest, I haven't delved into this. But that was certainly an impressive and an eye-catching win. And given that there's no sort of horses that really bounce off the page in that field, then you'd have to think that moving out is very much a deserved favourite. So
and another possible Group 1 winning
three-year-old filly.
Three-year-old filly for Waller.
What a stable of three-year-old fillies he has. I mean, I know he has a lot of horses. We've said it before. Like, so when you have a lot of horses, then the stats are probably on your side. But, jeez, something.
Imagine hey, come springtime.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, the Mornington Cup was, everyone was truckloading the favourite in the Mornington Cup, but it wasn't the favourite who got the win. It was Banker's Choice. And this was a great result for Glenn Thompson, who's had a pretty rough couple of months. Banker's Choice, his first stakes win as a solo trainer since the death of his training partner, Mike Moroney, and obviously Lindsay Parr taking over the Ballymore operation. So Glenn's going to be going solo elsewhere, not joining Lindsay Park. Berkshire Breeze, I thought, looked the winner, 2-1 from home, and then just couldn't muster anything late. Yeah. Banker's Choice strong to the line. So that's a golden ticket in the Caulfield Cup, Rich. But you probably think that he goes to the Caulfield Cup as a Lindsay Park trained horse rather than a Glenn Thompson trained horse, although that's obviously a decision that's up to the ownership group, but I would imagine that it's a Rupert Lee horse, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. That's Talazar. So I'm not actually across that. So are all horses that were with Mike Moroney going?
Yes, Mike Moroney's wife put out a statement saying that, basically that Ballymore and the stables will be absorbed by Lindsay Park. Mike had a great opinion of the three boys and that sort of thing. So essentially, I'd imagine that unless the ownership
don't want to do it. Yeah,
horses, can
do
what then they want, just get absorbed into Lindsay Parker. Glenn Thompson has got 20 boxes there at Flemington now, so he'll be able to set up his own.
Yep.
Little operation. Yep. And that makes sense, really, because, I mean, the Lindsay Park is that three Hayes boys. So it's not like Glenn Thompson could go from being a trainer to going back to being an assistant trainer. He's a trainer in his own right. So it made sense. But
I did hear that he got offered a job running Ballymore within the Hayes operation, but knocked it back. So good on him and good luck to him. But my thoughts on that race, firstly, so Banker's Choice probably goes to the Warrnambool Cup next. And Berkshire Breeze, we're all on him in the den. When I was watching it live, I thought maybe Mellum just left his run a little late, but then I went and watched the race again. It was a beautiful ride by Mellum. Got him there right in time, and he should have won by half a length if he was good enough, but he just couldn't. Couple of horses that you got to query about whether they want to keep racing, Young Werther and Just Fine. Mm. Both just seemed as though they just weren't.
Well, really Young Werther ain't so young anymore. Like, he should just be called Werther.
Mm, true.
Yes, I agree with you, though. You've got to ask whether they do want to come back for another campaign.
Yep.
Banker's Choice, Warrnambool Cup.
Yep.
Going down to Warrnambool, Rich?
I won't be Warrnambool. No.
Have you done a Warrnambool Cup?
I haven't.
Have you done a Warrnambool, mate?
I haven't. But
the old it's a marathon, not a sprint, rings very, very true. I went to a Winnable Cup and went a bit hard, a bit early, and was out of petrol tickets at the turn. But I've done many Darwin Cup weeks, and I tell you what, that's a bigger marathon. JRA plate on the weekend at Randwick. Now, this is a good pointer toward the Queensland Carnival because Bois d'Argent is, of course, last year's Doomben Cup winner. So he'll go back and he will defend his crown up there, victorious in the JRA plate. So just sort of hitting, he doesn't really do much until this time of year, but it was another terrific ride from Ethan Brown as well.
It was beautiful, beautiful front running ride, wasn't it? Yeah, so Bois d'Argent will go towards Doomben Cup, probably run in the Hollandale along the way. Faulkner Park will also be in the Hollandale. Of course, Faulkner Park was the breakout star of the Queensland winter last year. The Doomben Cup is coming together really nicely. Let's put the market up and have a look. So we've got Buckaroo up the top there, who's on his day is one of the best weight for age horses in Australia. Antino, he couldn't possibly take $4.60, especially after the weekend. Faulkner Park, $6 doesn't seem too bad. Royal Patronage could go. So the big,
he's running this weekend in Hong Kong, and then he's going to come back.
Yeah,
and,
yeah. So the Doomben Cup's not for quite a while. I think it's in late May.
It's about the 20th of May, I think.
Is that what it is? Yeah, yeah.
It's always around my birthday, Rich. So just FYI, if you want to get me anything, just mystery quaddy in the Doomben Cup, mate.
We can do that. So yeah, all roads lead towards that. Nice win by Bois d'Argent. And why don't we have a look at the win of the day poll? In the den, Rog. Here it is.
Yeah, good. Good. I saw, it's rival polls. So I saw Gators one on Twitter. It was Nepotism also got the chockies there. But that was it was not as close as the one on the den, though. That's very close. And rightly so, they were the two best wins of the day by a mile. Interesting. Now, the win of the weekend, though. Let's be
this
honest.
This is true.
Up the den.
Up the den.
So what this is, Rich, this is your, the Wolf Den horse gets the chockies at Oakbank on Saturday, pays $8. And how much did you have on it?
I didn't have a crack on it. I'm not sure what everyone else did. I feel like King said it would go around without his money this weekend. I'm not sure what the other boys did.
You just have $20 on it to say, $20 on it.
They all had nearly their biggest bets ever in its first start when it got beat, and then it wins at $8, and I don't think any of them touched it. You try and work that out, Rog, the logic behind that.
Yes. Well, that was a terrific win. Well done to the den and well done to Gout Gout too, because the stall races yesterday. Now, so the stall gift is today. It's in a few hours as we record this show. Massive weekend down there in regional Victoria, in Western Victoria. Gout Gout's a headlined act for the stall gift, and they get him on board as an ambassador for the stall races. Biggest race meet they've had there in years because of the amount of people in town just for this bloke. And they can't even get the track in order for the races to go ahead. I mean, what kind of a stuff up is that? I don't exactly know the ins and outs of why it didn't go ahead, but I don't really care why. How could they not get the track in the right order to race yesterday? And credit to where it's due. Gout Gout still turns up, still judges the egg and spoon race, and still makes that appearance. So, you know, he didn't have to do that. Well, maybe he did because he was an ambassador. But still, the fact is they've made a day out of it at stall. But
they got something from the
race. How do you not get the races to happen? It's not exactly, I don't know, you probably don't know regional Victoria overly well, Rich, but it's not exactly an easy trip to get to stall.
No, that's what people were so angry and disappointed about, is that why did all the participants even have to get out there? Like, why couldn't they have worked this out the day before or a couple of days earlier? I don't know the full story behind it, but there's no doubt that Racing Victoria will do a really thorough investigation, and there'll probably be some repercussions for the people around it if they erred in their judgment and made some poor decisions. Because yeah, it's unacceptable what happened.
Look at the crowd there. Look at the crowd, and that like I say, this is something that the racing club, the financial boon they can get from this meet could probably sustain them for quite some time, because legitimately this is the most interest we've had in a stall gift for. Since I can ever remember. Yep. And they stuff it up. So
yeah, it wasn't good. So yeah, I'm pretty sure that we'll see some repercussions come out of it. Just on Gout Gout though. So
love him.
Say 2032, right? Brisbane. Let's hope everything goes to plan. Is what will he be? Be like 24, 25. And say he's in the 100-meter final, the 200-meter final. What percentage of the Australian population do you think would stop and watch that race?
Be like Kathy. But he's probably got an
more
Olympic.
Probably. Like, I reckon more.
He might have an Olympic gold before then, though. Because he might win one in LA in 28.
Yeah.
There's a kid, a 17-year-old kid in the States, who ran a 9.8 wind assisted on the weekend as well, who's absolutely rapid too.
9.8.
So, yeah, strong wind assist.
Okay.
But he's rapid nonetheless. I can't remember his name. So we've got
how old was he?
He's also 17.
Yeah, wow. Well,
so
yeah.
We've got some exciting times in the world of athletics. This is not an athletics show, but I do just love seeing things run fast, whether they be humans or horses. But more importantly than Gout Gout, than Group 1 racing, it's the Steward Speed Round.
Steward's Room Speed Round.
Very short speed round, speedy speed round today. Race 7, Bangor Boy Lane, vet clearance needed. This is at Mornington. And race 8, Q Tempesta, stood flat-footed, needs to jump out before it races again. That was it. There was no suspensions, reprimands, anything out of Mornington. That was it. Ranwick, Ethan Brown, copped the careless riding reprimand on Jimmy Starr. Still great ride. Nash on Komochi, same race, same penalty. Jamie Mellon on Cool Jakey in race 10. She used the whip on 9 occasions prior to the 100, so she got a reprimand for that. Tommy Berry was the only suspension. That was out of race 1 on Fugitiva. So he is suspended for 8 days from May 1 for careless riding, shifting in. In terms of horse actions, Komochi was lame in the off 4 and near hind. And Urafiki from race 2, bled 1 nostril. Balazine, race 7, bled 1 nostril. So that's a 3-month ban for both of those two horses. Let's get in to cook the book.
Cook the book.
All right, let's get into cook the book. And Kingsley Bartholomew is absent this Easter. So Richard Irvin from Wolfden and also our good friend Tom Hackett from Ladbrokes. Tommy, we've heard enough from Richard already this show, so we'll start with you like we always do. And we'll start at Mornington. The favourite won 6 of the first 7 races, and all races were won by horses well in the market. I think the only longest price winner was $10. So I imagine the track, which is often a graveyard for punters, was such for the Ladbrokes book on Saturday.
Yeah, very interesting meeting at Mornington. You're right, Rog. It's a much maligned track, Mornington, from the punting fraternity. But the first 5 races on Saturday, the punters finished in front. At one stage, it looked like it could be a complete punters clean sweep. Our mate Moods helped us out with Bridal Waltz getting the job done. It was about $150,000 winner for the book. And then there was the winner in the last was a winner for the book there as well. So it wasn't certainly not a catastrophic day for the book at Mornington. But the punters did finish in front in 6 of the 10 races on the card, which at Mornington is quite rare.
Yeah, mate Moods, he didn't tip us that one though, Tommy.
That's very true. I think he tipped the other one in the same race.
No, it was a different race. It was her half-sister, She Dances. He did tip us. He did tip us one on Friday, though. What about in Sydney with the group ones? Obviously, Jimmy Starr was second-elect. Nepotism was favourite in the champagne, but every man and their dog was tipping Jimmy Starr. Were they the worst results for the book, or was, say, a Briasa, who was ultimately favourite in the all-ages, saving grace?
Well, the punters got it basically bang on in the champagne stakes. The 3 horses that fought out the finish were the horses that were losing results for the book. So the worst result in the champagne was Spicy Lou, which was a $217,000 loser, but Nepotism still a losing result of $130,000 as well. Interesting race, the all-age. I sort of did think there'd be more of a sustained push for Jimmy Starr than there was, but he ended up being a winning result for the book. He was a winning result of $145,000. The massive guy was.
Everyone was tipping it all week. That's impressive if you guys have managed to win on that race.
Yeah, it was very interesting, the betting here. There was, and we were top of market for broadsiding, and punters have just come from everywhere to back this horse. He was a losing result of over $1 million. So he was our,
geez, would have been our. That you really, they put themselves out there, didn't they? Like $1 million liability is big for you guys, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's very rare that we'd take on a horse to that level. So the bookies got that one exactly
right. And was it based on just, you know, you guys priced it a lot longer than that and the trading team just wanted to have a crack? Was that what it was about?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, no, our trading team had the horse marked significantly longer than the price that it did go around. It wasn't like the trading team were particularly keen on anything else in the race. We definitely had Jolly Star marked under what price that she started, but broadsiding was the clear horse that they did want to take on, and punters were keen to jump on. So, no, a very big result for the book. That was ended up being our biggest liability of the autumn, but we obviously got the result there. Briasa, the other losing result in the race, was a losing result of just over 217,000, but no, Jimmy Star, a nice result for the book there.
obviously, we were surprised by that, Rich. And I know that Jimmy Starr was very popular in the den. So that's quite a standing to take it onto that level.
Yeah. All week, everybody was saying this is the best $7 chance you're ever going to see. Obviously, it continued to firm all week long. But that was a really good result. It was a pretty bad day in the den. Didn't tip many winners. I know Kings lost. Most of the boys in the den lost. Just back to Mornington. Like, Berkshire Breeze was a big go for everybody. And it was disappointing. Had every chance. So overall, it wasn't a great day. I got one question for Tommy, just rounding out the all-age stakes. Broadsiding, we chatted about broadsiding earlier in the show about what they will do with him next. What do you think they should do? He's four-time Group 1 winner. Do they send him off to stud, or do they race on and try and go the Animo path and be dominant at weight for age? I think nobody's going to say that he's at Animo's level at the moment, but if he can't get to Animo's level, is there any point in continuing to race on, would be my question to you.
Yeah, I think Godolphin are probably the best place to be able to make that decision. I do think that, obviously, as racing fans, we do want to see these horses race on. And we know that these star three-year-olds that then race on and go to another level as a four-year-old, like an Animo, really do enhance their reputation. But to your point, if they don't think that broadsiding can get to that level, then probably the question does need to be asked, will he do his overall value any harm? But I think there is probably the reason why I think they might lean towards the breeding barn with broadsiding is that I'm not sure they're convinced as to what his best trip is. Like, I think we got to the point with Animo that he was obviously that dominant winner of the Rose Hill Guineas and his three-year-old prep, and then he'd run really well in the Ladbrokes Cox Plate as a three-year-old. I think they knew at that stage that he could be a genuine top-line weight-for-age horse at 2,000 metres. I'm not sure we can say the same thing about broadsiding at this stage of his career. So if you look at their resumes, it's not too much difference. Probably the one factor that Animo does have is that he did win that Caulfield Guineas. But outside of that, it's actually a very similar resume. And there was probably some people having the same conversation about Animo before he did go into his four-year-old season, where he was able to stamp himself as one of the modern champions, but I'm not quite convinced. So if I was betting, I would say they do retire broadsiding and we don't see him on the racetrack again, which would be a shame, but I can understand the commercial decision.
Interesting, Tom, that you say that Godolphin are the best place to make that decision. You know, given they own the horse, I would have thought that was stating the bloody obvious.
Yeah, but I think James Cummings, I think we know, is a very good judge. Like, he's not so, and I don't think he's one to make emotional decisions either. So there'd be some trainers and some connections who I wouldn't trust to make that decision. I think they'd let emotion cloud themselves. But I think James Cummings is one trainer I trust to make the best decision for the horse and for the overall commercial value of the horse as well.
He'd be disappointed with how broadsiding went on Saturday, because it was a bit of a left field decision to pull him back from 2,000 to 1,400 weight for age. And I think I said it beforehand, like, I think the pressure, like the early pressure in those races, tells on these young three-year-olds. And it just seemed when it was time to go, he just didn't have it. And J-Mac said that after the race, he probably rode him not the best and probably should have ridden him a little bit quieter early on and then just lead him up for one last sprint. But yeah, I would probably retire. And the other thing you've got to factor in is all these magnificent fillies that will be four-year-olds. You haven't just got Via Sistine, you've got those four or five, you know, really good fillies who are coming through as well, who broadsiding we'd up against in those big weight for age races.
I think that's the exciting thing for the spring, is that we do have these, like, this host of exciting fillies coming through, and there's a lot of decisions to be made by their connections as well as to what path they do take. Obviously, Aliana, I think that Derby win was one of the most exciting of the spring. I would love to see. I know Chris Waller normally does like to go on Epsom Cox Plate path with these fillies, but for me, she looks like an out and out 2,400 meter horse. I'd love to see her in a Caulfield Cup. While a horse like Treasure of the Moment, I still think that she's won two Oakses, but I'm not convinced she's a filly, a stayer, I should say. I think she has done that on pure class. I think her best win was actually the CUNY over 1,400 meters. So she's one I'd love to see go over, maybe end up in a Ladbrokes Cox Plate, but go that sort of mile path as well. So a lot of decisions to be made with these fillies, but it's an exciting place for us to be as racing fans. So I do think we do have quite an exciting group of horses at the moment. Then you look at the sprinting ranks. We never got now you've sort of got a bit of a, who's the best sprinter? Private Harry, Jimmy Starr. We haven't seen them go sort of head-to-head. So I think that's going to be an exciting contest for the spring as well. And you've sort of got horses like Jolly Starr who are going really well. So I think it's been a really good autumn. Not great for the book, because all these good horses have just kept on winning. But I think from a racing fan and a racing purist standpoint, I think it's been a terrific autumn, and it shapes up for a really good spring as well.
All right, let's get back to the book and the cooking of it, because that is what this segment is ultimately about. And as we shift our focus from Melbourne and Sydney to Adelaide, Perth, Brisbane, not so much Perth, just one race really, in the coming weeks, what were the sort of single worst results and best results in the two major cities over the course of their respective carnivals, Tommy?
Result for Ladbrokes over the autumn was light infantryman in the Australian Cup. That was the race pride of Jenny, was just absolutely truckloaded. Before broadsiding on Saturday in the All Age, she was our biggest liability of the autumn. So light infantryman getting the job done there was the big result. Single, it's a funny one where there wasn't probably a single race that was a particularly bad result during the autumn, but obviously on the championships day two, the combination of all those favourites, Via Sestina, Fangirl, all getting the job done.
A treble wipeout.
Yeah, there was a, and Treasure of the Moment as well in the Oaks. It was a complete strip there. So basically, I'd say the worst result of the autumn has just been the multis. If you look at the sheer result of these multis, every week you're looking at the multi number on the Ladbrokes daily report, and it's a complete strip out for the punters. So all up punters have had an absolute fill up this autumn. There's no doubt. And as we've said a few times now, Kingsley predicted that would happen about 2 months ago.
And that has been a good indication that the punters have been on top when they're winning in multis as well, because that doesn't often happen. Before we let you go, Tommy, between the three of us, because you're not just a Ladbrokes spokesperson, you're a racing fan, you're a racing analyst. What's been your personal highlight from a racing perspective, your best win in the autumn?
Yeah, it's a much maligned race, the All-Star Mile, but I thought it was a really good contest this year. You had Tom Kitten, who in that early stage of the autumn, I think, was probably the standout, along with another Will, Mr. Brightside, all going toe for toe. Tom Kitten just getting the better of Mr. Brightside late, when another Will, probably a good thing licked there. So I thought that was a terrific contest in that early autumn period. I think I'd say for the Sydney autumn, it was less, I'd say there wasn't too many exciting contest, but just a lot of really impressive individual performances. And I think probably the most impressive of the lot for mine was the way Aliana just destroyed the boys in the Australian Derby. That was a win of a very, very good horse. And she's probably my most exciting horse to follow heading into the spring.
And Rich, what about you? Because I think you might be on a similar path.
Yeah, I mean, I think if we'd all agree that Aliana was arguably the best of the whole autumn, and that would be my pick. She was just brilliant. It was exciting. Obviously, we truckloaded her for the Mates Mode Pop we were running. We all backed her ourselves from $4 all the way into sort of just over $2. So that would be the highlight. And the Autumn Carnival was down in Melbourne was fantastic as well. Obviously, Schwartz is probably highlight purely from just a betting point of view, financial point of view. Because once again, we sort of highlighted early on that it was, a great bet at double figure odds at the time, and everything turned out well. So, no, it was a wonderful carnival, and it's not over yet. Well, it is over for Melbourne and Sydney, but there's a lot of great racing to come in Brisbane, Adelaide, and even Hong Kong this weekend, which we're going to touch on soon.
Yeah, absolutely. I wouldn't put Schwartz right at the top of mine, as much to no doubt Mytho's chagrin, but a middling race and, not the greatest Group 1 victory.
That's Rich talking through his pocket there, Rich.
Yeah, I know. I fully disclosed that as well. Yeah. So,
I mean, for mine, it's hard to go past Aliana, but let's go US talk show style where we just have to pick opposing views for the sake of conversation.
Australian shows as well, don't they? Did on NRL 360 and everything.
Hard to go past in terms of outside of Aliana. The way Skybird dropped on her rivals and bombed them late in the Black Caviar Lightning was pretty awesome. Even if it did deny my favourite Stretton Angel that elusive Group 1 win. But I love the way Skybird did that, and I'm great for Mitch Friedman. He's a ripping fella. So it was good to see that victory in another Group 1 for him. So, but I think, yeah, if we're taking it to a vote, I think we're all pretty much in agreement that that Aliana was the best win of the carnival. Tommy, thank you very much. And I dare say we'll chat to you next week as we debrief the first two Group 1s of the SA Carnival and also the Quokka.
Sneak peek.
All right, this Saturday is shaping up as a very nice little race day, Richard, because it kicks off the Adelaide Carnival, which has really started to hit its straps in the last couple of years with the additional prize money being pumped into it. So you've got a Group 1 double. The Robert Sangster is the marker we're going to look at first. Asura's favourite in a 1,200-metre Group 1. If there's ever been something you can leave me out of more than that, I'll go, hey. So, yes, I will not be taking us for at $4.20 because I do think she pretty much tips out at about 1,100. But I could be proven wrong. That's fine. But there's no way I'm backing her at 1,200. I'll be on one of my favourites there in Stretton.
Stretton. Don't forget you scoffed at me when I wanted to talk about Aviatris a couple of shows back.
No, and I will be doing a... We never actually did put no, that never put this about on the air. We did this. This is in a little peek behind the curtain for our viewers and our listeners. But a little group text between myself, Rich, and also Trollmitt was that I said if Aviatris wins a Group 1, I will do a show in her Racing Silks colours. What Rich and Trollmitt didn't realise at the time is that she wears the Western Bulldog Silks because she's owned by David Price. And I'm a Western Bulldogs supporter and have many Western Bulldogs coloured tops. So happy to do that.
Excellent. I look forward to hopefully seeing that. But it'd be great. The Sangster. And yeah, very interesting. Asfura, 1200, big query. Bloody. I think that market will move around a lot.
Yeah, bloody oath.
Commemorative seems like it has a bit of timing about it.
We will. We've already looked at these Australasian Oaks. Let's head over to Ascot to the Quokka 1200 meter, $5 million Group 1. Overpass, $2.50. Well, he just loves racing in WA. Although, as someone did point out once before, he just loves the fact that when he races in WA, that the horses aren't as good as when he races on the East Coast. So it's not so much that he loves Ascot. He just loves the competition or lack thereof.
Crocetti over from New Zealand. Headwall's flying.
Yeah.
Be a good race.
Should be a ripper, yeah. Front page, good Albury horse, so going along there as well. So that should be a good one. And then, of course, big race day at Sha Tin on Sunday. What a weekend on racing.com because they have obviously the rights for South Australian racing as well as Victorian racing. And then they've got the rights for the Quokka as well. And then they show the Hong Kong races too. Yeah. So cracking weekend. And we've got the QE2 Cup, the 2000 metre Group 1, Liberty Island, the favourite there. I'm very open and honest. I don't know a lot about international horses. I just tend to skew towards ones that I've seen race or have had something to do with Australian racing. So you're probably more across it than I am, Rich.
Yeah, well, Prognosis obviously ran second in the Cox Plate, so that gives us a bit of an anchor on the form there. He's $8. Cape Ferrar won the Derby. Ruby Light was favourite for the Derby. Goliath is a horse that's owned by John Stewart, Resolute Racing. We all know a lot about him. Liberty Island was in the Dubai Turf. Didn't run, ran about 6th or 7th, something like that. So the Dubai Turf was the race that Soul Rush beat Romantic Warrior right on the post. El Venturador comes over from New Zealand, one of the better horses in New Zealand. So it'll be a great race, but it really heats up when we get into the Champions Mile.
This is the one we're really interested in from an Australian perspective because you get to see Mr. Brightside, who is second leg in the market. And you'd think, this is where you want to be betting into the World Pool on Sunday because there's going to be a lot of patriotic money for Mr. Brightside. No, in Australia, if you're just betting into an Australian toe, you're going to have a lot of patriotic money for Brightside. You go into World Pool where Brightside is just another horse actually going to get a decent price if you think he's going to be the winner. Royal Patron is, of course, another Australian horse, as we mentioned earlier. He's in the race too at $15. But that excites me greatly and I hope for the Hayes boys that he can go over there and get the job done. But their old man's got a pretty handy type in the other group one in the Chairman's Sprint.
Ka-ying
Rising, $1.20. And you see he's $2.70 or something for the Everest.
$2.30 I saw yesterday.
$2.30. And as Richo pointed out on Saturday when they bought up that market, imagine jumping into $2.30 now and then you get a heavy 10 on Everest Day and he's never seen a wet track in his life. So
or he doesn't come. But you get, this is true because you get your money back if he doesn't end up coming.
Yeah, but you don't get your money back if he can't run in a heavy 10. Yeah, so word to punters, don't be stupid. But you could probably, better than bank interest, $1.20. No tariffs on winnings in Hong Kong.
And I should mention we are doing a Ladbrokes Mates Mode pot for the Hong Kong Champions Day. It will be fantastic.
Really? A little Sunday session in the den.
Little Sunday session, yeah. So the pot for that will open very soon. Go and get involved in that. I'll share all our bets probably on the Saturday or the Sunday. Last time I wasn't that happy with how I handled betting at fixed price or total. I'm making a couple of changes to handle that.
And more reports, not many people were happy with how you operated, Rich.
No. But
no. Well, you said you had a bad day in the den on Saturday, but you weren't running a mates mode pot, so that's all right.
We weren't.
Get that stinker out the way.
Yes.
And just back it up like you did on William Reid Day at the Valley and give
it. That's right. We have a great record with the mates mode pots. I think we're winning at like 35% on turnover or something, which is pretty good. So very good.
Can't argue with that. Punters.
Nope.
And you if don't you don't go like broke it, back it, and winners. Yourself. That probably sees us out, doesn't it? Rich?
I think it does. I think it's time to go back to chilling. Easter long weekend chilling.
I'm going to go watch the Hawks and the Cats this afternoon and look forward to the return of my young children to probably prevent me from watching the Hawks and Cats this afternoon.
Happy Easter, Rog. Up the den, everyone. Thanks for the support, and we'll see you next week.
You win some, you lose more. For free and confidential support, call the number on the screen or visit the website.